In this episode, I throw some really tough Photoshop and Lightroom questions at two friends of mine, Mr. Dave Cross and Mr. Matt Kluskowski. We also talk about their brand new upcoming virtual Lightroom Summit, which is starting next week as this is recorded, May 3rd, 2021. You can check it out at thisweekinphoto.com/Lightroom Summit. That's thisweekinphoto.com/Lightroom Summit.
This is TWiP.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, an extra special treat, and this has never happened on This Week in Photo before. I've got two guys that know a little bit about Lightroom and Photoshop, Matt Kluskowski and Dave Cross are in the house. So these guys, I mean, I'm intimidated. I feel like I know a little bit about Photoshop, Lightroom, but every time I watch the videos that they have, I come away with at least, I don't know, five or six tips and opinions on different things. Like, we're going to talk about, Matt, your opinion on AI. We're going to talk about that a little bit. So there's a lot to talk about.
Before and just steal Dave Cross's tips.
Yeah, I want to hear those in. Before we dive in, Dave, why don't you start? Give us a quick intro to who Dave Cross is.
Well, I am a full-time Photoshop educator. I taught my first Photoshop class about 2 weeks after it came out in 90, and haven't stopped since. So in one form or another, I've been teaching Photoshop to whoever will listen. In the early days, it was a classroom of six people on computers, and now it's whoever will log on to websites and watch videos and things like that. So that's what I've done for the last, whatever that math is, 30 something years to teach Photoshop.
Really? Wow. So you've seen Photoshop grow from what, version 2 or 1?
The original, like whatever it was called back. In fact, I had a quick look at the beta version before it even came out, when it was this brand new thing that came with a scanner, and people were like, what is this? It's scanning software? And it's like, well, no, it does a little more than that. But I think back then it had, you know, like whatever it was, 10 tools and of course no layers, but it was still magic compared to what we had otherwise, which was nothing. So, you know, it grabbed my attention very quickly. And the interesting thing for me has been also the progression. I initially, when I taught classes, it was almost exclusively to printers, like printing companies who had staff that were trying to transition into scanning and working digitally as opposed to the way that they had been before. And of course, now it's used for everything.
It's everything. It's the operating system for creativity in a lot of ways, at least the baseline operating system. We're going to talk about that a little bit as we progress through this. Matt Kluskowski, what about you? What's your elevator pitch?
My elevator pitch is I teach Lightroom and Photoshop on my website at mattk.com. I got into this stuff. So I used to be a software developer, and I tell the story often. So you are looking at, not you and me, Frederick, but the person right below us, at least on the Zoom screen. So Dave actually got me my job at Kelby. So not a lot of people know that. Dave, I was a software developer, and I had made friends with people at Kelby because I lived in Tampa, and you know, I used to go to Photoshop World and stuff, and I knew Dave. And I got a call one day from the HR person, and she's like, yeah, we're looking for another content person. And Dave said that you do this stuff. So I went in, got an interview, and that's where I started working at Kelby until 2014. And then
something like that.
Yeah, about 2014, and I left Kelby and ended up on my own here at the website. So
yeah, and it's been onward and upward since then. And you know, Matt, congratulations on, or both of you guys, obviously. But Matt, looking at that transition and what you've built with your channel and the trainings and all that stuff, it's, you know, it's a model that online educators and content creators and marketers even, I think should follow, because I get your emails, I see the website, I see the different things that you're doing, and I love the genuineness that you have in your delivery. And it's not buy now, limited time only, this, or hey, I'm going to teach you this
98% off. I love
those. You're like, wait, we haven't gotten to the end of the talk yet.
And I got to echo that, because you know, I've known Matt for a long time, and I get a lot of emails from various people trying to sell me on their online courses, and without exception, Matt's emails are always the most genuine, where he's like, hey, my wife and I did this. And I mean, it's not just like I do. My wife works with me as well, and we don't try and hide the fact that we're not some huge company. It's just the two of us. But that kind of leads to a more personal touch, and I think that comes through in Matt's approach all the time as well.
Yeah,
that's great. Thanks, guys.
You see, he was delayed again, Dave. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that a little bit. He had to think about whether he wanted to say thank you or not. He's like,
Matt's not really slow, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the internet.
I wonder why I'm delayed. That's weird.
I don't know. Who knows? It might be Zoom demons in there. Let's dive in and talk about this stuff a little bit. Before we dive into sort of the tips and ideas about Photoshop and Lightroom, I want to talk a little bit about this thing that you guys have collaborated on, this summit, which is coming up soon, right? Tuesday?
It's Monday.
Monday.
It's Monday, May 3rd.
Yeah. So what is that? I mean, obviously it's a Lightroom summit, so we can guess it's a lot of people that come and teach us on different things about Lightroom, but what's below the dermis? What's the real deal there?
Well, it kind of started off as a year ago, I did a Photoshop virtual summit, and the whole thing came together in literally a couple of weeks, right when the pandemic was starting. And it just occurred to me that, you know, live events were going away, left, right, and center. So we needed something else to do, both from a participant standpoint, but also from a speaker standpoint, because all the instructors were finding that their income was also disappearing because of no events to be speaking at. So we did a couple of Photoshop virtual summits and went pretty well. So then had the idea of a Lightroom one. And basically the idea is it's, for all intents and purposes, much like an in-person event where you would go to a convention center and decide which class to go to. But the big difference, of course, is you can sit home in your PJs and with your puppy dog and whatever you want and watch them online. And so it's 5 days packed with classes, 8 classes a day, 20 instructors, 40 classes on all different types of topics. And having done the Lightroom one, the Photoshop one, I live much more in the Photoshop world than in the Lightroom world. So I knew that I needed to knock on someone's door that was much more tied into the Lightroom planet. So I called on Matt, because I knew that not only is he one of the top instructors in the world, he also knows people that more than I do. So that's why I called on him to say, I need your help with both finding instructors, but also putting together kind of the curriculum that would reach a wide range of topics that would appeal to different types of users.
Yeah. And it's working. And this is the second one or third, second one that you've
got? This is the first Lightroom one.
Okay. You did a Photoshop one previously.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Photoshop ones. I mean, it went really well, both from a standpoint of attendance, but also for me, as an educator, the biggest thing was the incredibly high volume of emails that I received from people saying things like, this couldn't have been better timing. Like, I was desperate to know, what am I going to do, because my work has gone away. So this gave me something to focus on, and some very heartfelt emails that the kind of thing that why we do what we do as educators is when you get the feedback saying, this changed my life, this made my life easier, that kind of thing. Yeah. So that's what happened in the first summit, followed very quickly by email saying, when is the next one? We did a second Photoshop one, and then I did a survey asking what, if there was another topic to cover, what would it be? And Lightroom was by far, actually the number one answer was photography, but I thought that's a whole nother kettle of fish to try and put together a summit, an online summit on such a broad topic as photography. But a close second was Lightroom. So that's why we decided to go ahead with it, because so many people were specifically interested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a perfect segue into this first part of this chat. Excuse me. And that's, you know, I foreshadowed it a little in the beginning, like I'm in this period of transition, and I'm trying to understand that transition is trying to settle on the, like I said, the perfect operating system for creative work, right? The obvious choice is Creative Cloud, and the whole suite of characters in there, Photoshop, Dave, like, you know, it's been around 30 plus years. It's an app that can do anything you can throw at it, for, you know, literally, and with After Effects on top of that, the sky's the limit, you know, for what you can do. The other part of that, though, is you guys know the resistance to the Creative Cloud and the switch to Adobe's from a consumer standpoint, the switch to the subscription model, which has a lot of people looking for alternatives, maybe not Adobe's core audience, because they're going to stick with it no matter what. But there's other people that are like, well, you know what? There's this, there's that, or whatever, and I can cobble together something that gets the job done. It may not be as integrated as Creative Cloud, but it gets the job done, and I'm only paying one fee for it, you know, i.e. Capture One and Affinity Photo, et cetera. Matt, I want to throw it to you first. When you're faced with somebody that's making that decision, you know, let's take funds out of it, you know, even though the subscription thing's a big deal, take funds out of it for this chat or for this question, and they're just making a decision on where to place their bets because they want to be in this creative world for the long haul. Yeah. And they don't have to relearn stuff, you know. Is it better for them to just, you know, dive in with the new kids because they're doing cool stuff and AI and all this stuff, or should they go and buy a brick building, you know, on the Adobe side and just deal with it and change the furniture out every now and then? What do you say?
I mean, I look at it this way, I'm going to speak more toward photographers because that's primarily who I talk to. But of all the things that photographers spend money on, $9.99 a month is the cheapest thing that you will spend money on as a photographer. You know, it's we can argue aside from the camera and the lens, it's the most important thing that you'll spend money on for your photography. So I usually just, you know, frame it to people that way, that, you know, this is $10 a month for arguably one of the most important steps in your photography. The problem, there's other software out there. I'd say there's two things. The one thing that I hear is as well, you know, I'm gonna buy Capture One, it's perpetual. Yeah, it's perpetual, but nobody uses it that way. Like very, very few people have their 5-6-year-old version of Capture One. Everybody, the new features come out and everybody buys a new version. So you're now buying software. You say you're not in a subscription, but guess what? When you get charged every year for a new version and you buy it, you're in a subscription. You just choose not to call it that. So
you're dating, you're not married, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's that part of it. And then the other thing is, you know, we all know operating systems phase versions out. So it's that's happened this year with quite a few things. So your perpetual version, like, you know, if you bought a perpetual version, you name whatever it was, and you buy one of those new M1 Macs with the new whatever the heck it is in it, I don't even have one. So, but now your software is probably not going to work on all of this new technology. So it's not as perpetual as you think it is.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I say community. You know, if you put Photoshop and Affinity in a checklist next to each other, you can check off the boxes and say both of them are the same. Anybody that uses Photoshop and spends a lot of time in Affinity trying to see if they can get the same in Photoshop knows that they're not the same. You can check the boxes, but the features are just not there. And then you don't have the community around it. You know, you don't have all the education that you're going to find, you know, and I hear it every day. Somebody sends me an email and says, "Hey, Matt, you know, I saw you use the patch tool in Photoshop. I use Affinity. What do I do?" I'm like, they have repairing tools. Just give them a try. You know, like I can't help you because you don't have the software that I showed it on. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But on that, that's perfect. On the other side of that is the investment. So you're saying if a new learner is coming in and they just want to pick that operating system, starting from zero, because if, you know, starting from, I know how to use Photoshop now, I don't like their pricing, so I'm going to Affinity and I have to do the find out what tools map and what techniques don't work and all that. That's one thing, one transition. The other transition is from zero. Like you're just getting into this and you need to buy stuff and they're doing the price check. And you're like, well, okay, let's go with that one. You know, what would you say to that, Matt, in terms of guiding that person to make the right choice?
So you're going to spend $50-$60 on Affinity. You're going to have to get a Lightroom. So you're going to spend hundreds of dollars on Capture One. You're going to spend the money, And then what's going to happen is you're a brand new user, and now you've got this mountain of community to search for education here. But as a brand new user, you're going to make your life and give yourself this small mountain of education to search through. And I think in the end, it makes it harder, but hey, people do it all the time. And my thing is if your photo looks, if you're happy with the way your photo looks, I don't care how you get there.
Yeah.
I know the way that I'm going to do it, but it doesn't work for everybody. And that's fine too. So
I had a case really just the other day where somebody emailed me and said, I was interested in your site, but I notice all your training is on the latest version of Photoshop. And I still use CS6 and print out on my Epson printer. And I love the way my photos look. And I was like, okay, so there you go. I'm not sure what, that really wasn't a question. That was just sort of a statement. But there are people out there that are so adamant about, you know, I'm anti-subscription that I'm going to stick with CS6 until it stops working. I'm like, okay. I mean, as Matt said, if you end up printing out something and framing and putting on your wall and your family says, what a great photo, I don't think you're going to say, and I didn't CS6. You're just going to go, ta-da. You know, here's an image I'm very proud of. So, I mean, you could argue that with the Creative Cloud, we have the advantage where Adobe keeps innovating things and bringing out new tools, which make our life easier. But that's not to say you can't do it in earlier versions of Photoshop. It just takes more time.
Yeah. I love that. That's a good answer. You know, the other piece of this equation, or an additional piece of this puzzle, is the ecosystem and how everything sort of works together and round tripping, and, you know, it just kind of lockstep works with some performance issues like in Premiere. You know, everyone knows about that, but Adobe's constantly making things better. But the rock solid integration with smart objects and all that stuff is pretty hard to compete against, especially the smart object thing. With the ecosystem, Dave, I'll throw it to you first. With the ecosystem, you know, you've got Lightroom Classic, CC, we've got Photoshop, After Effects, et cetera, depending on what the constellation of things you need to do the job. Talk to me about that, like how the ecosystem works together, including mobile. Like, how does all that gel together?
Well, one of the things that I love about that aspect of what Adobe's done is it's taken away stress for me. In the good old days of, you know, the early days of desktop publishing, as an example, you know, we had a page layout tool, and you had a tool like Photoshop for photos and Illustrator for graphics. And in every case, you'd have to save in a particular format, like an EPS file, and then place that into your page layout software. And if it didn't quite look the way you wanted, you had to start over again. And that's all gone away because the native formats of Adobe PSD goes into Illustrator and InDesign as a two-way editing street. So you place a PSD into your InDesign file, and if it's not quite right, you do a special double click on it. It jumps right back to Photoshop. You would update it and save, and it updates in your page layout software. I mean, it's just, and that works. I'm using those examples because those are the three I use the most, but the same idea works in other Adobe apps. And now you can add in the saving to the cloud, so you can start Photoshop on your desktop and then be traveling somewhere and decide you want to do a little work on your iPad, and you just pick up where you left off. And it's really eliminated. I mean, let's put it this way. I remember in the early days, I used to teach a seminar that was all about EPS file and clipping paths and TIFF and when to use, you know, whatever format, because there were all these different situations. And now it's just like, it's just not something people have to worry about. And that's, I think, an overlooked strength of that whole interaction between, or integration, I suppose you'd say, between the Adobe applications. Now, I will say on the downside, it's still not quite there, because for people like me, I just love using keyboard shortcuts. And when I switch between the different applications, I have to think for a second, wait, in this application, it's not the same shortcut to do the same thing. And that's the one area where it's a bit of a pet peeve, where it would be so much easier if somehow, and I don't know how they'd ever do it, the main keyboard shortcuts for, you know, selecting tools or whatever it might be would all be the same, as opposed to right now where they're close, but every so often, like scrubby sliders. Everyone should have scrubby sliders. It should just be a rule, and not everyone does.
You know people. I have a feeling you know one or two people at Adobe.
Years ago, I was actually visiting the Photoshop team, and I, in the middle of our conversation, I said, just out of curiosity, where do the Illustrator people work? And he's like, oh, right down that hall. And I was like, so can you just like pick up scrubby sliders and walk down the hall and just give it to them? And he was like, sadly, no. I wish it was that easy. And I was like, dang it. not being anyone who understands anything about coding, I'm like, just give it to them. You know, just give them the code. And he's like, no.
Yeah. Meanwhile, maybe it means ripping out the basement, changing the plumbing and everything exactly. Just for one.
So it's only like 2 million lines of code or something like that. And I'm just like, so just do it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do. We're consumers. We don't care how it gets done. Just do it. Exactly. Make it happen. So on that, and this is a question, this is an open dialogue for all of us here. I had a gentleman that you guys, at least one of you I know is familiar with, Blake Rudess. I had Blake on the show, I think it was last week or so. I haven't published the episode yet, but the conversation was centered around Lightroom and Bridge. And basically the gist was, is Bridge at a point now in its evolution where it could make Lightroom unnecessary or obsolete? Matt, I want you to answer first, because I know you and Mr. Rudess have a friendly rivalry going back on a couple of different levels, sports included. So,
you know, I think for some people, Bridge could do it. You know, Lightroom to me wins for a few reasons. One, I print and I don't care for the workflow, the Bridge Photoshop workflow and the print workflow in Photoshop. It's not horrible. I prefer to print from Lightroom. Yep. So it's going to win from there. It's going to win from just ease of use, just ease of moving around between folders and collections and all those things. For me, Lightroom wins in that aspect. And then Lightroom wins in sharing. So I finish a photo shoot, I drop some photos into a collection, I right click on it and I say share. And now that collection's on my phone and that collection's on my tablet, that collection's on any computer I want to log into my account on. And let alone Bridge, nobody's got that workflow. Like, there's not a competitor out there to Lightroom that has even bridged, that has even stepped into the space of being able to do that. So those are the big things. If you're just looking at photos, you know, you shoot once in a while, you bring a folder of photos on there. I mean, heck, I use Bridge sometimes for that. Like, if I just went on a quick shoot and I don't really want to do much with it, like I'm going to photograph my kids some prom pictures tomorrow, I'm not going to bring them into my Lightroom catalog. Like, I'm just going to have a few pictures. I'll just open up Bridge, double click the folder and just be done with it. And then those photos go off on a hard drive somewhere opposite from the photography that I like to work on, you know?
Yeah. So it's kind of like,
I think it's a great workflow if it works for you.
You're looking at it kind of like the Bridge, or Bridge is kind of like Finder or Windows Explorer for images. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's at that level. I just want to view it real quick. I want to, you know, maybe do a simple edit or something to it, but nothing serious. And it's transient, so I don't need it to be cataloged and keyworded and all that. So,
yeah.
Okay.
See, I would say, though, that when you ask Matt whether Lightroom or Bridge is better, that's like asking a gourmet chef, do you like using these $1,000 pots and pans, or could this cast iron one fry a steak? And you know, I use Bridge, and because I use it so much, it's just as easy to use, in fact probably easier than Lightroom for me. So I think it really comes down to what you use. I would agree, there's no question that Lightroom is better at quite a few things like printing, but I guess it also, for me, it's been, I always use Bridge and Camera Raw because that's all there was before Lightroom even existed. And when I first saw Lightroom, I was like, oh, okay. But for me, I think it also comes down to the type of photography you do, whether it could still be a professional. But for example, I work with a lot of people who do almost exclusively compositing. So they don't take 1,000 photos of their model. They take 50. So the big advantage of Lightroom of going through so many photos so quickly kind of goes away because we're doing a smaller volume in Bridge, and then all the, you know, the same kind of idea. If you want to do global adjusting, you can. Okay, it takes an extra right click, but it's still possible. So
yeah,
I've been the lone wolf in the Bridge supporter world for many years, and I'll continue to do so. I would be the first to say, yeah, there's lots of places where Lightroom has advantages, but there's also Bridge continues to improve, where some of the things that for years people have said Lightroom was better than Bridge, I'm like, not as much as it used to be.
That's the gist of it. Yeah, it seems like Bridge is, it used to be just a no-brainer decision. Lightroom is designed for photographers by photographers and just go to town with it. And Bridge is kind of just a file explorer for all of the Creative Cloud apps, mm-hmm. and non-denominational, right? And now
I think
it's coming up.
The other part of it is the question of, can I do everything in Lightroom, or am I going to use Photoshop? Again, depends on the kind of work, because I do so much compositing. I know that a great deal of the time I'm going to end up in Photoshop. So because of that, it's just as easy for me to use Bridge in Photoshop than to use Lightroom in Photoshop, just because of the interaction between them. I mean, I certainly could use Lightroom for that purpose, but for me,
what are the deltas, though? Do you know, Dave? Like, what are the deltas between the two? The main thing, is it keywording? Is it just the printing thing?
Printing is a big one, because if you have an image in Bridge, Bridge is definitely more, could be thought of more as a browser. So you can't adjust a photograph in Bridge. You jump into Camera Raw, and once you've adjusted that, you can apply that to multiple photographs, but it's not the same as Lightroom. So it's mostly browsing, which means if you want to do things like print or apply a filter or composite things together, then you bring those files into Photoshop to do that.
All right. So this is the perfect cage match question then. So each one of you have a young Padawan learner coming to you that wants to learn about Photoshop and Lightroom, or just photography, and they want to use Adobe products. Should they go the Bridge route, Dave, or should they just skip it and go directly to Lightroom, Matt? Like, how would you guys guide this little person?
So I'd be the first to say, in a case like that, and I've said this to people when I've actually had that question, is Lightroom would be a better place, because now you're learning one tool. And if you need to use Photoshop, it's there. And then down the road, once you're more experienced, you may rethink that. But certainly, whole raw processing.
If they're coming in, you know, not a Lightroom versus Photoshop question, but a Bridge versus Lightroom question. Should they embrace the bridge to Photoshop workflow, or the Lightroom to Photoshop workflow as a new, brand new blank slate?
Well, I think the Lightroom direction is probably a good one for someone that's brand new, because in one place they can do the organizing, the keywording, everything else. Not to say that Bridge can't, but it's just they can feel like with one tool, I can do a good portion of what I want to do. And then if they need to jump into Photoshop, they have that ability. I mean, Bridge, I like it because I use all the Adobe tools. And as you said, it is the bridge between all of those tools. So I can view my Illustrator files and my PDFs and everything else all in one place, and then go to the different applications. But from a strictly photography standpoint, it's probably a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. So good, Matt. I'm sure you agree with that, right? Start in Lightroom and use the Lightroom Photoshop 1-2 punch.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Lightroom's one program to learn. And some people, when you get into photography, don't need Photoshop right away, or don't want to put the learning curve time into learning it. So it's one place to do it all, which is kind of a nice way to start. So
we should people, that said, this is, I know the answer to this question, I'm going to ask it anyway, but Photoshop can do everything, you know, at least pixel wise that Lightroom can do for the most part. It is a, you know, it's a sledgehammer, where Lightroom is a smaller hammer, right? When it comes to image processing. Is there a scenario where someone coming in fresh to this should just say, you know what, I'm skipping that Lightroom thing because I'm just going to learn the hard tool and get over that hump, and then I'll have superpowers. Like, what do you think to that? What do you think about that?
I don't know. I wouldn't recommend it. Like, Photoshop's got a huge learning curve, and really, again, I guess it goes to who you're talking to. If it's a graphic designer, go learn Photoshop. Yeah. If it's a photographer, learn the raw editor. The raw editor is going to be, you know, 70, 80, 90% of the work you do on your photo. So I'm always still going to say, learn the raw editor. If you learn Lightroom, then you know Camera Raw and Photoshop, but don't open a raw photo into Photoshop and bypass Camera Raw and then start going through and doing layers for all that stuff. That would be your number one. It's a hard workflow. Number two, it's nowhere near as good of a workflow on the photo either. So
yeah. I think one of the things about Photoshop is both its strength and its detriment is there are so many tools that it's very capable. But when you're brand new, there's so many tools that it's confusing. Whereas if you just, for example, if you look at a photograph and say, I need to tweak the exposure, go ahead and try and find somewhere in Photoshop it's called exposure. I mean, we know it's curves or levels or something else, but it's not obvious. Whereas in a raw processor, there's a slider that says exposure and you drag it one way or the other. So from that respect, the global processing aspect of it is definitely easier in the raw side because it's a series of sliders that just make sense.
Yeah. Not a lot of stuff to get in your way and confuse you. And when really you just want to make that sky darker or something. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you got all these tools. Another good segue, because one of the other things I want to chat with you guys about is the idea of artificial intelligence as it applies to images. So we've got Adobe Sensei and a lot of experimental tools in there that some of them are impressive. Some of them, you know, need a little work, but that's why they're in there as experimental. So we've got that coming. Then we've got other players like Skyloom and Luminar with their Sky Replacement that Adobe came out with Sky Replacement after they came out with theirs. And, you know, some people say theirs is better. Some people like the flexibility of how Adobe gives you the alpha channel and all that stuff. When we look at AI, Dave, maybe you could start with this. When we look at artificial intelligence as it applies to photography and image making, how do you see it? Do you see it as just something to take the grudge work out of repetitive tasks? Or should it be helping us with our creativity and making suggestions and things like that? Where do you fall on it?
I definitely fall more on the side of, wow, this automated selection tool saved me time. Yeah. But I'm not a big fan of the idea of saying, click on some tool that will look at my photograph and make decisions about it. You know, that idea of, you know, I will suggest to you what exposure you should use or whatever. I'm not completely sold on that. But when it comes to things like the AI to, again, because I do a lot of compositing, the select subject function in Photoshop has saved me. I can't even begin to imagine how much time, and it continues to get better. But then that's just done a step that still allows me to have my creative side to do something with that. So the neural filters, which was the latest development, I have real mixed feelings about some of those, because some of them, it's actually kind of bizarre. The first time you click on something and say, make them happier, and all of a sudden teeth appear that weren't there before. I mean, that's just weird to me. I mean, I've done it a few times just as a demonstration. Every time I do, I'm still like, I don't know. That's just, I kind of see what they're going for, but some of them are just like, and there's others that I'm like, not sure when you would use this, but I think a lot of it is sort of.
I haven't opened those up, Dave, since they were released.
Really? Yeah. They're not part of your everyday workflow?
No, I literally haven't gone there since I did the video the day of the release back in October.
I'll tell you, the last time I used one of those neural filters that changes the expression on someone's face, it's because I was trying to do a tutorial about swapping heads. And the only photo I had, everyone was smiling in both of them. So I took one of them and made them frown just so I could replace them with the smiling one. But that's not probably the most practical use of them. But I mean, that type of artificial intelligence, I mean, I guess I see what Adobe's thinking in terms of trying to do things that make decisions to help you. But I would definitely shy away from, you know, there's been talk over the years of maybe there'd be a website where you upload a photograph and it will do things to it and let you download it as to say it's being fixed. And I'm like, that's one of the things I enjoy about working with photos is making that decision myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. And yeah, in speaking with the folks over at Skylum, I know part of their target is to address the market of people that don't necessarily consider themselves creatives, but need good looking images, right? So kind of to what you said, Dave, being able to upload an image of a cake because you're a you're a caterer and have it come back down looking fantastic. And you're like, oh, wow, that's good enough, you know, off into the races. So yeah, I don't think it's that kind of stuff is designed for artisanship and kind of getting in there to the sub-pixel level. But with that, Matt, you did a video on Adobe Sky Replacement feature. I remember that. And you were showing some tricks around, folks should check this out for sure. You're showing some tricks around how the Adobe makes the mask and, but the thing that was missing was reflections. And you show some really, really clever tips on how to put a reflection in the, on whatever reflective surface is in there. But we, when you look at stuff like that, like Sky Replacement, do you find that that's useful? I mean, the neural filters notwithstanding, Sky Replacement seems like it's borderline magic for what it can do. How do you fall on that?
Yeah, man, they knocked it out of the park. Like I heard Sky Replacement was so full disclosure here, I don't ever download a beta of Photoshop. I actually got booted off of the beta program for non-participation. Because I'm not a beta tester. I don't want to beta test software. I got a business to run. So I didn't open that up until the day it came out and my jaw dropped and I just started throwing photo after photo after photo at it. And I'm like, it's freaking amazing. I use it on my wildlife photos, you know, I'm able to do quite a bit with wildlife on it too. So I think they knocked it out of the park on it. I think it's, you know, there's polarizing views on it, right? There's polarizing views on everything. So why should Sky Replacement be any different? And so my view is whatever you want to do to your photo. If you think it's bad and you think that's not about photography, then don't do it. And if photography for you is the artful process of making the image you wanted it to be, then you do whatever, you know, it's personal responsibility and whatever works for you. So I always try to get away from the polarizing views of it and just say, it ultimately comes down to what your feelings on are for photography. For me, I use it all the time. Like I didn't think I was going to use it all the time. I knew it was coming and I wasn't that excited about it because I don't know. And I use it all the time. Like I go back to old photos and I'm like, let me see what it does on this one. And I'm like, man, I save it and I share it. I put it in my portfolio. It was a photo that's, you know, 8 years old. So it's been fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I love that. I did that too. Cause when it first came out, it was either Luminar or Photoshop, but it was a shot that I had of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco on one of those boring, the bridge was lit beautifully, but there was a boring blue California sky. And you know what I did? Boom, you know, and it's suddenly an amazing image, you know? So yeah, that's great. Dave, what about you?
And all it does is take the bar up. Like, it's just, you know, people like say it's cheating and it's ruining photography. Everything's cheating to some degree in every industry, anywhere, everywhere across the world. Right. And you always have people that say, no, it's making it harder because now more and more people can get great results. Well, the people that are really good rise to the top and do something else. So we don't even know what that something else is, but people will rise to the top. And photos will get better and better.
Yeah.
One thing I would add into the discussion is that the only worry that I have over the sky replacement function in Photoshop is it's all too easy to use one of the whatever number of skies it is that Adobe provides for you. So I know myself when I'm out doing something else with my camera, I pay much more attention to skies than I ever used to, because now I know if I create my own collection of skies, then that makes me feel at least a little better. If I'm replacing a sky, it's replacing with the sky that I took, as opposed to that same sunset that however many thousand people use today from the built-in ones. So it's very easy to add your own skies into that sky replacement function. So why not do that?
Yeah. That's really interesting. There's so much stuff. There's so many things to talk about, right? So we talked about AI, we talked about differences between Lightroom, Photoshop, and who should be using it and all that. I wanted to, as we wrap this up, and we're going to kind of stop the recording and then open up the chat room for a couple minutes. But as we wrap this up, Matt, starting with you, you've got this YouTube channel with, I don't know, at least how many, 10 videos on there, something like that. You've got a YouTube channel with a bunch of content on there. If somebody wants to like, just, you know, get in and get a better, more meaty understanding of Lightroom, where should they start? How should they go about doing that? Say it's somebody that just, they understand it, they know the sliders and, you know, all that stuff, and, you know, they can bounce back and forth. But if they want to get to a Matt Kluskowski level of understanding, how should they do that?
Well, glad you asked that, Frederick. my YouTube channel is, yeah. My YouTube channel is community. I think of it that way. It's community engagement. And so, it's almost kind of like, I kind of think of it as the R&D room. You know, yep. I'm sitting here working on something. I come up with a cool idea and I make a video on it and I share it on the YouTube channel. So it's scattered. It's whatever idea I happen to come up with that day, which is tends to be all over the place, but lots of great content. If you're interested in, you know, learning the building blocks of things, then that's why I make courses. So that's, you know, head over to the website, mattk.com. And, you know, I've got Lightroom courses from beginner, advanced, all that other stuff. So those are the kinds of things that teach you the step-by-step. Again, my YouTube channel to me is more community engagement of just sharing tips and tricks that I come across, you know, throughout any given week.
Yeah, it's well done. I'm very familiar with your set. So let's see. Dave, what about you? You, like you said, you've been with Photoshop since the beginning, since it was beta, right? So the second half of the question is, somebody wants to get to a really deep understanding, how do you think they should go about it? And then second, before you answer that, the evolution of Photoshop over the years, what do you feel like's missing right now, aside from the slider control thing? Like, what do you feel like you want to see in the app? Because I can't look at it and say it's missing this thing right here. It'd be the perfect app if we're missing this. I don't see anything missing. With 30 years of experience, what do you see that's missing?
Ironically, I think the thing that's missing is the fact that there's too much. You know, the fact that from someone who's brand new says, all I want to do is X. All I want to do is, you know, remove this leaf from the bottom corner of the photo. Well, there's six different ways to do that. But at the same time, there's probably one or two that are really good and the others are still there. Adobe could easily go through and say, let's just take out some of the stuff we don't need anymore. Because,
for example,
I know it won't, but I'm just saying that's what I wish they would do, because
yeah, I agree.
You know, so it comes to, I was saying, I can't remember the last time I used the clone stamp tool, because the content aware tools are so good that it's just, and that used to be when it was called the rubber stamp tool back in the day, that was my number one tool. I mean, I was an expert at that. Now I haven't used it in so long. So I know it'll never happen, but in an ideal world, I would love if they would take away some of the, let's call them unnecessary tools, because while it's fine to say, hey, there's three or four or eight different ways to do it in Photoshop, why is there? Because it's not like you need all eight of those. You know, it's usually you have a plan A, and if that doesn't work, you have a plan B, but you don't need D, E, F, and onwards. And that just, to me, adds to the confusion. So in my course, when I teach Photoshop Essentials, the first thing I tell people is you do not need to learn every tool and every single menu in Photoshop because you'll never use them all. So let me help you cut to the chase and say, this is the core set of tools and functions that you will use, and don't worry about the other things. And I know human nature, I have at least one student in my membership group that continually asks, but what is this for? And I keep saying, don't worry about that. But it's in there. So why, you know, it's like, I know, but it's okay. You don't need to learn that. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges and one of the things that I'd like to do in my approach to teaching the essentials of Photoshop is learn the core functions. And over time, if a project calls for some more unusual tool, then you can add that into your collection of tools to use. But the core functions like layers and selections and adjustments and so on, those are the ones that people can focus on. And much like Matt, I mean, I have a membership-based site where people join, and then every week there's a new tutorial, and I release courses and do live Q&A sessions, all with the goal of trying to be perhaps a little more personalized about it. So it's not just one size fits all, but here's a course to get you started. But then through these smaller tutorials and the Q&A sessions, let's help you kind of cut to the chase and narrow down the focus on what it is that you want to learn.
Love it. Love it. And where's that? Where's your site at, Dave?
That's learningphotoshop.cc.
Learningphotoshop.cc. And Matt, what about you? Where's your website at?
MattK.com.
You mean you didn't put your whole last name? Like, why not?
I did not.
What's the matter?
You
can write it. It'll just redirect you to mattk.com.
I thought you were going to say you had to register the 7 different spellings that people try to of your last name.
I did. Yeah. I bought Kozlowski, Klikowski. I own like 5 different misspellings.
That's awesome. Excuse me. All right, guys, for the final question here. Matt, you could start with this one. This is quick. You ready? Pin tool or a selection? In other words, do I really need to learn the pin tool and Bezier curves?
Nope. 100% no.
No. Okay. All right. Because watching these Photoshop tutorials on YouTube, some of them are all about that pin tool for making selections out of objects.
I'm going to get myself in trouble by saying this, but usually when I see somebody using that, it's typically somebody that learned Photoshop a long time ago and learned a method and won't let go of the method. And they don't know some of the new technologies that are out there. But as I would agree, Dave, would you answer the same?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. There's just been too many advances in selections, especially in the last 3 years. Like it's made it so you should never even touch the pen tool for a selection, a complex selection of hair and all those things. Like you can't even get close.
No, I would build on that and say one of the concerns that I have when I see people touting the pen tool is they'll say something like, you'll get a more accurate selection with the pen tool. And that's absolutely false. I mean, the final selection will be the same. It's just the pen tool might give you some advantages of like editable nodes, but with the, as Matt said, with the newer technology like select subject and the object selection tool, it gets you so close so quickly that you just don't need to the aggravation. I mean, if you're an expert pen tool user, then go to town, still use it. But for someone starting out, I would never recommend that they try and learn how that thing works.
Love it. Love it. All right, Dave, tablet or mouse or tablet. Trackpad?
Tablet.
Tablet all day long?
Yep. All day long.
Matt, tablet or mouse?
The other day I was doing something and I had my pen here, my Wacom pen, and I put it down somewhere and I was in panic mode for about 10 minutes because I couldn't find it. So I couldn't do anything on my computer because I was like, I literally do not have a mouse connected to my computer. It's
really
100% tablet.
Wow.
I'm mixed. Okay. I go through phases. I go through different phases, to be honest with you. Like, so sometimes I'm all about the tablet and sometimes I got my trackpad here and sometimes I use that. And it's just, when I find myself in more
business mode where I'm not editing photos, which I'm typically not. You know, I'm either making a course or writing marketing copy or writing email copy. Like when I'm in that mode, for some reason, the trackpad and the keyboard work better for me. If I get myself into editing mode, then I got my tablet here and I'll just nudge that over and that's what I'll use.
Yeah.
That's interesting, you don't have a mouse on there. I do the best of both worlds because the tablet I have has a touch function. So I use the fingers to scroll and then the pen for other things. It's almost like I have a touchpad or a magic mouse, whatever it's called, with the tablet. Now, sometimes that's not the greatest because you're doing something in Photoshop and something suddenly pops up because you touched the wrong way, but that happens rarely, thankfully. So for me, I have a mouse over there somewhere in case I ever really need it.
So again, it's back to personal preference, whatever works for you and you just do it. So you guys, we mentioned at the beginning of this chat that you guys were doing this event called the Lightroom Summit that's coming up starting Monday for 5 days or 3 days. Yeah. How long is it?
5 days.
5 days, starting on May 3rd. I've got a short link in the chat. I'll put it on the screen and in the show notes for this episode. It's an affiliate link and it's at thisweekinphoto.com/Lightroom Summit. Lightroom Summit. One thing you didn't mention, Dave, when you were talking about the summit is the pricing, and it is completely free, right?
Right.
So can you explain that a little bit, the free versus paid?
Basically, the way it works is that each day, as we mentioned earlier, 8 classes go live, one every hour, and those are free to watch for a 48-hour period. So, for example, classes that go live on Monday, you can watch all the way till Wednesday, and then they go away. They go into this VIP area. So you could certainly watch the entire thing for free because, well, it is free. But our thinking was that with the content that's being made available, there will be some sessions where you'll want to watch them again and probably again. And perhaps you're a beginner and some of the sessions are a little too advanced for you right now, but you know eventually you'll want to watch them. So that's where this thing called the VIP pass comes in, and that's an optional purchase which gives you lifetime access to watch the recordings of all the classes as well as some important extras like class notes. A lot of times when you need to go to an online conference, you don't get any kind of notes. Well, the majority of our instructors have supplied workbooks that range anything from 3 pages of bullet notes to 60 pages of notes on their class. So you get those as well. We even have audio only files. So if you want to listen to Matt talk about Lightroom while you're jogging, you're all set for that. So the VIP pass is normally $149, but it's on early bird right now for $99 until the event starts Monday at noon. The price goes up. So the sessions start Monday at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, but the early bird goes right until noon or wherever whenever I remember to click the button that changes the price.
Cool. So check it out, folks. thisweekinphoto.com/Lightroom Summit. And I hate to say it, Dave, you just did a Act Now limited time only, didn't you?
I did.
So Act Now, limited time only, supplies limited.
And it's not 98% off.
It's not 98%. I'm selling all my courses right now.
Right. we could put the summit price to I saw an email the other day. It was like $4,570 and it was on sale for $27.
Yeah, that math works.
So Dave, the real summit price is $4,500.
I should say that the regularly priced.
Don't do that. Don't go down that rat hole. Don't do it.
Oh, and I should mention also that Adobe is one of our main sponsors and they have very nicely provided us with some lovely door prizes. So every day we'll be giving away a 1-year photography plan for the Creative Cloud. So if you already are a subscriber, they'll just extend your subscription by a year. And if you're not, well, then you'll get your first year for free of the Creative Cloud photography plan, which is Photoshop and Lightroom.
Fantastic. Look at that. Guys, thank you for coming on. You know, it's always a pleasure to talk to people that know mountains more than I do about this stuff. You guys have gone broad and deep into Photoshop and Lightroom. You understand it from Dave, you understand it from a DNA level, right? Both of you guys. So from a DNA level of Photoshop. So if you guys want to you know, even if you don't go to the Lightroom Summit, which you should, make sure you check out both of their channels and dive in and join their respective communities and all that, because some good stuff. If you're interested in creating amazing worlds within your computer or your tablet, you know, no better place to start than these guys. Thank you guys for coming on, and I'll let you guys get on with your week.
Yeah, pleasure.
Always. All right. Take care.
This is Twit.